Last week we had seen the Gemara in Irvin, Nun Gimel and Aleph. The Gemara had discussed that the hearts of the earlier generations were wide, like the entrance to the Ulam, which was 20 amos wide, and the later generations was like the entrance to the Heichal, and that's 10 amos. And us, the Gemara says, we're like the eye of a needle, like the hole that a needle goes through. And then the Gemara went on to say, Abaye said, and our logic is our Gemara. Our learning of Gemara is like trying to bang a peg into the wall. And Rava said, and our logic is like trying to stick a finger into a block of wax. And Ravashi, who we pointed out most of the halacha, he compiled the Gemara. Ravashi said that we forget things, like if one were sticking his finger into a huge pile of seeds, that when you pull the finger out, so the hole fills up right away. You stick your finger in, you make an impression. There's a hole where your finger is. When you pull your finger out, it quickly fills up. So that's how quickly we forget things, Ravashi said. And now we're going to continue this Gemara simply because the Gemara gives us important tips that will help us in all our learning, even though it's not relevant to what we're learning in Igeret Rav Shir Aigon, but it's an important Gemara to know. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Bnei Yehuda, the sons of Yehuda, Shekpidu al Leshonam, they were careful with their wording, they were careful to speak cleanly, so their Torah, they were able to retain their Torah. They were successful in Torah learning in retaining what they've learned. Bnei Galil, those that lived in the Galilee, they weren't as careful about how they spoke, to speak in a clean fashion. So their Torah did not last. They lost it. They didn't retain the Torah as well.
Precise
and clean. The Gemara says that one has to try to say things in a clean way. Usually in the United States, when a person says a euphemism, so you think he's a politician. But the Gemara teaches us that people are supposed to use euphemisms. We're supposed to find nice ways of expressing things. And the Gemara says that you could tell whether a student will be successful or not based upon how he speaks. Does he present things in a nice way? Does he use a clean tongue? Does he prefer saying not pure rather than saying tame, defiled? One has to try and say things in as nice a way as possible. Yeah.
Well, if it's a mix, like sometimes you say nice, sometimes you don't.
So we're supposed to try and speak as nicely as possible. We're supposed to try and use clean language. If sometimes you have no choice. Last week we were trying to understand. Last week we were reading the Midrash, and there were things that we have to understand in the Midrash. So then you sometimes have to use the exact terminology. But when you can, so we try to refer to things that are less than modest. We try to refer to them with allusions. The pasuk when it describes Yaakov's offspring, so it says Yotze Yerech Yaakov, those that came out of Yaakov's thigh. No children come out of the thigh, but that's a pure way of describing how Yaakov fathered these children, that these are Yaakov's offspring. And when it says that King Saul, Shaul HaMelech, went to the bathroom, so it says he went to pour out his feet. He wasn't pouring out his feet, he was doing something else. But this is a nice way of saying that he went to the bathroom. So when we say bathroom, we say Bet HaKiseh, the house where there's a chair. Well, every house has a chair. But we call the bathroom the house where there's a chair. So in modern Hebrew they call it Shirutim. But in the Gemara's language it's called Bet HaKiseh. You'll notice that some parents speak to their children, and when they say feces, they'll say kaki, and when they speak about meiraglayim, so they'll say pee pee. And then you'll notice other parents use a cleaner language. They'll say gdolim and ktanim. And a child, from the time he speaks, can get accustomed to using a nicer language. Gdolim and ktanim. Are you going to make large or small? That's how the Gemara refers to it when the Gemara uses its clean language to describe. Is a person sitting down or standing? Is he urinating or defecating? So everything can be described with nicer language or less nice language. And the Torah trained us to try and use nice language. And the Gemara says that this isn't just good traits, but this is also part of what will ensure that we retain the Torah. If our mouths are accustomed to saying clean language, so then that for some reason affects that we retain the Torah. Yeah.
Should rabbis or even just Bible scholars or studiers and yeshivas, is there ever a good reason to use a word that's considered a bad word?
Yes. In the Gemara says that if we're concerned that students won't understand what we're saying, so then we'll spell it out. That's why I gave these examples, so that you know which words are good and which words are not good. I could have just said gdolim and ktanim, but I wanted you to know which words I'm referring to. Some of you are new to the language.
So in normal day human life, should a Torah person use those words?
A Torah person should attempt to use as clean a language as possible, but the Gemara says, when for the sake of alacrity, for the sake of saying things quickly and concisely and correctly and accurately, one has to use filthy language, so then depending on how filthy it is, but very often that's okay. We're not saying a person will curse for that, but a person might sometimes say certain words. Like when we discuss certain prohibited activities, we sometimes spell out what those activities are, so that to make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about. If a person is going to sit in class and try to tell his students that it's prohibited to masturbate and he won't use that word, well, they might not understand it. There are words that sometimes have to be used, because otherwise the people listening won't understand. And the shortest, most concise way of saying it is by using that terminology. But in general, we have to try and attempt to use as clean a language as possible. So certain words that we consider curses, it seems that the older generation doesn't consider it as a curse. Like I noticed some rabbis using the word darn. I grew up that was swearing. Those rabbis know more than me, and if they use it, then they obviously feel it's not swearing. I wouldn't use it, but I noticed that some rabbis do. Yeah.
I was always known it was a bad word. Like, it was a bad word. And he said it during class. He actually said it 3 times in a row. So I don't know,
I don't know.
We're all human.
I don't know.
He was like swearing with the book.
Make mistakes.
So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes, in order to explain a concept, you have to use a word.
Sure, I'm thinking that was like his exception for saying the word.
I don't know. So back to the Gemara. The Gemara is saying that the Bnei Yehuda, those that lived in the tribe of Judah, were more successful in retaining their Torah because they were more careful to speak a clean language. The Gemara rectifies and says, Bnei Yehuda didai kilishna. Those that lived in Judah, that they were careful to review the things they learned, exactly how they learned it, and being that they were careful to review it exactly, and they used to give themselves signs how to remember what the halacha is, how to remember what they had learned, so they retained their Torah. And this is important. That's why very often we give acronyms here, and when I learn, I automatically try to think in my mind numbers. Like we just started in Daf Yomi, the first Mishnah in Yevama says there are 15 examples of situations of marriage where there isn't the mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza. And then it enumerates 15 examples. How do you remember 15 examples? So you break it down, and you say, okay, this is compared to this. Now you break it down to sets of the first 9, and then the next 4, and then the next 5, and you work it out. So a person is supposed to try and make himself signs in the Torah in order to retain the Torah, and that's what those that lived in Judah did. Bnei Yehuda gamu mechad rab nitkamat otam biyadam. Those that lived in Judah would learn by one rabbi, and that's why they retained their Torah. Bnei Galil, those that live in Galilee, delo gamu mechad rab, they didn't learn from one rabbi, so they didn't retain their Torah. And here it depends on what we're talking about. Like certain learning, you're supposed to learn by one rabbi, otherwise it'll be confusing. Once you've attained a certain level, then you need to see other ways of learning. But initially, a person has to find a rabbi we could learn from and learn. A person can't keep jumping. There are always guys who come to Machon Meir, and then they jump to another yeshiva to check it out, and then jump to another yeshiva to check it out. So before you go to yeshiva, fine, check out which yeshiva is good for you, and go there. But once you've chosen a yeshiva, and it's okay, so learn. You can't keep comparing. You got to stick to one place and learn. It doesn't have to be Machon Meir. But stick to your guns, learn, and afterwards compare. But you got to get somewhere first.
You're talking about yeshivot, and that's talking about rabbis. How are we supposed to choose one rabbi if we actually...
So, rabbi, he means a way of learning. In their time, by choosing a rabbi, you chose a certain way of learning. Even when you learned by that rabbi, you learned with his disciples also. It didn't mean specifically only one person. It meant a way of learning. In those times, you would learn by one rabbi. Good. Here, you're not going to learn by one rabbi. If you come to Machon Meir, you'll have five or seven rabbis. Very good.
And this is referring to Gemara?
So here, the Tosus explains that this is talking about Gemara. That when a person learns the way of learning Torah, he should have one rabbi. But when it comes to learning logic, the learning thought procedures of the Gemara, so there, the Gemara tells us, if you learn from one Rebbe, you're doomed. If you want to succeed, you have to learn from more than one Rebbe. First, you have to learn from one Rebbe in general, how to learn. But once you've attained enough knowledge, and it's a question of learning ways of logic, the thought processes of analyzing the Gemara, so there the Gemara says you should compare. You shouldn't just learn from one Rebbe. But when it comes to getting the tradition, you walk in. What are we doing here? You have to get a basis for what's going on. Yeah, Pshat Gemara. Pshat, what's going on? The basis, you have to have one Rebbe. You learn, you've attained the level where you're already working out halacha, working out the different rules of logic within the Gemara. There, one should have more than one should explore. One shouldn't stick only to one Rebbe. The Gemara says, the tribe of Yehuda who used to tell other people what they learned. They'd share their learning with others, so they were successful in their learning. Bnei Galil de lo galu masechta. Those in Galilee, that they didn't share their learning. What'd you learn today? Oh, a lot of things. They didn't sit down over lunch and tell their friend who's in a lower share, hey, I learned this interesting thing, that interesting thing. They were in their world. I learned what I learned, you learned what you learned. They didn't succeed in their learning. In order to succeed in learning, one has to be willing to share what he learned. And the Gemara says this is the difference between Shaul and David. That David used to tell everyone what he learned. He didn't keep heirs to himself. And Shaul, who's the greatest rabbi in his generation, as we'll see next week, the Gemara says that Shaul was exceptional. He was the chief rabbi. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. But because he wasn't apt to sharing with others everything he knew, he wasn't successful. Yeah?
So in Maaseh, in our lowly level of understanding, when we learn something, what are the benefits to give it over? Or your situation, perhaps, you know, we hear something and we might...
Well, everything depends on the situation, but you come home and your parents ask you, what did you learn in yeshiva? Tell them. Very often, you'll hear something, and there's a certain joy in not sharing it with other people. Because you know something no one else does. And that's exactly what the Gemara is trying to preclude. Yeah, a person should be interested in sharing his learning with others.
Shouldn't the responsibility, like when we say, in the name of somebody or for other you learn, something that you have the responsibility to transmit what was said accurately?
Right. This is assuming you understood it correctly, you know, well enough to give it over. Very often, a lot of the mistakes that people make in the Machon is because they heard from someone who heard from someone, and then it's not exactly accurate. Assuming you have it accurately, then one has a responsibility to give over what is done. So, we'll have Arvit is in a minute. So we'll have to stop.